Hi, Dave Emery here. Side two, for the record, program number 774. The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 14, The Corporate Connections, and the Public versus Private Dynamic. This is being recorded on February 16th of the year 2014. We're going to jump right back in and hit the ground running. We have been reading from an article from PRWatch.org from November 27th of 2013. The article is by Nick Surgey, S-U-R-G-E-Y, The Googleization of the Far Right. Why is Google funding Grover Norquist, Heritage Action, and ALEC? And we've been talking about Google's funding of far-right organizations, this in the context of the corporatist connections. Of Google's support for Ted Cruz and the interests that were working to shut down the government last fall. And again, as I noted in For the Record programs 758 and 759, those are the forces that are behind Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, the peach fuzz fascist. He's no defender of civil liberties. He's a spook. And when you look at the interests behind him, they not only don't believe in freedom, civil liberties, etc., they literally believe in slavery, the antithesis. Skipping down in this article of Google and Ted Cruz and Grover Norquist, despite being 5 years out from the freshman senator's next election, Google's Political Action Committee has already made a $2,500 contribution to the Cruz re-election campaign for 2018, the largest amount that the PAC has given so far to any Senate candidate running that election year, according to disclosures by Google. Americans for Tax Reform, the anti-government group run by Republican operative Grover Norquist, was another new recipient of funding from Google in 2013. ATR is best known for its taxpayer protection pledge and for its fundamentalist attacks on any Republican who might dare to vote for any increase in taxes. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, ATR received 85% of its funding in 2012 from the ultra-partisan Carl Rove-run Crossroads GPS, another dark money group. By the way, I would note that both Carl Rove and Grover Norquist would be out of business if people had paid attention to Operation Green Quest. Both were linked to the funding apparatus behind not only Al-Qaeda, but Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Had people paid attention to Operation Green Quest, Carl Rove and Grover Norquist would be where they belong, which is in a cell at Guantanamo. Continuing, ATR President Grover Norquist infamously said that he wants to shrink government, quote, down to the size where we can drown it in the bathtub, unquote. Google's position on the relative size of government versus bathtubs is not known, but according to a Bloomberg analysis of Google's U.S. corporate filings, it avoids approximately $2 billion globally in tax payments each year through the use of creative tax shelters. And again, as I noted in side one, people basically have signed off on anything really resembling personal privacy. I noted this back in, for the record, 718 on Independence Day weekend in 2010. More about that, Yahoo News of January 10th of 2014. This originally from The Exchange. It's by Aaron Pressman, P-R-E-S-S-M-A-N. Headlined, Privacy Advocates Worry Over New Apple iPhone Tracking Feature, unquote. Barely noticed by most consumers, Apple's latest software upgrade for iPhones, iOS 7, included a capability for malls, museums, or stadiums to identify visitors and track their movements indoors with a startling degree of accuracy. Known as iBeacons, the feature allows a store to pop up, say, a coupon offer for Coca-Cola on a customer's phone just as they pass by the soda aisle. It also allows the store to track and record a customer's movements for later analysis. The rapid growth of smartphone use has opened a huge new opportunity for markets to collect detailed location data on consumers, so far mostly outdoors. But the sensitivity of the information has already sparked numerous controversies, including in 2011 when iPhone users discovered their phones were keeping a list of their movements in an unencrypted text file. And Nordstrom created a stir when it was caught last year secretly tracking shoppers' mobile phones via Wi-Fi in 17 stores. So the iBeacons, basically, skipping down. The scope and the risks and the sharing that takes place now is so far beyond the disclosures consumers typically see, unquote, warns Fordham University law professor Joel Rydenberg. They're not in the position to really know, unquote. That basically is what the Panopticon was all about. Your jailers can see you at all times, but you can't see them. What the iBeacons app basically is, people, this is called surveillance, okay? And people are, again, people are buying in on this, and I just can't feel a lot of sympathy. And again, what they should be afraid of is not NSA. I don't have any illusions about NSA. I don't think I have any illusions about anything at this point. And frankly, I think I could use some. I think I'd sleep better at night. But the NSA doesn't care if you break wind in your cubicle at work, as I had mentioned in side one. But these tech companies, the internet companies, the cell phone companies, and all of the interests that do business with them, and that's pretty damn near everybody at this point, they are very much concerned with every aspect of your life. And the internet companies are absolutely out front about using your personal information, which they track into the minutest detail. They are very out front about using that as a major capital asset for their business. Okay? Mussolini again said, il fascismo e il corporatismo. Fascism is corporatism. Let's take a look at some more of the wonderful goings on done by these companies. Pando Daily of January 23rd of 2014 has an article by Mark Ames, The Techtopus, How Silicon Valley's Most Celebrated CEOs Conspired to Drive Down 100,000 Tech Engineers' Wages, it reads in part. In early 2005, as demand for Silicon Valley engineers began booming, Apple's Steve Jobs sealed a secret and illegal pact with Google's Eric Schmidt to artificially push their workers' wages lower by agreeing not to recruit each other's employees, sharing wage scale information, and punishing violators. Basically, folks, this is, in effect, monopoly practice, okay? Skipping down, on February 27, 2005, Bill Campbell, a member of Apple's board of directors and senior advisor to Google, emailed Jobs to confirm that Eric Schmidt, quote, got directly involved and firmly stopped all efforts to recruit anyone from Apple, unquote. Later that year, Schmidt instructed his senior VP for business operations, Shona Brown, to keep the pact a secret and only share information, quote, verbally, since I don't want to create a paper trail over which we can be sued later. Skipping down again. These secret conversations and agreements between some of the biggest names in Silicon Valley were first exposed in a Department of Justice antitrust investigation launched by the Obama administration in 2010. That DOJ suit became the basis of a class action lawsuit filed on behalf of over 100,000 tech employees whose wages were artificially lowered, an estimated $9 billion effectively stolen by the high-flying companies from their workers to pad company earnings in the second half of the 2000s. Skipping down. In a related but separate investigation and ongoing suit, eBay and its former CEO Meg Whitman, now CEO of HP Hewlett-Packard, are being sued by both the federal government and the state of California for arranging a similar secret wage theft agreement with Intuit and possibly Google as well during the same period. I would note parenthetically, Pierre Omidyar himself, something of an acolyte of elements of the Austrian economics school, is the head of eBay, which owns PayPal, and he is also the corporate economic sponsor of Citizen Greenwald's new journalism venture. So note here, eBay and Meg Whitten. Continuing with the article, the secret wage theft agreements between Google, Apple, Intel, Adobe, Intuit, and Pixar, now owned by Disney, are described in court papers obtained by Pando Daily as, quote, an overarching conspiracy, unquote, in violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act and the Clayton Antitrust Act, and at times it reads like something lifted straight out of the robber baron era that produced those laws. Today's inequality crisis is America's worst on record since the statistics were first recorded 100 years ago. The only comparison would be to the era of the railroad tycoons in the late 19th century. Shortly after the sealing the pact with Google, Jobs, that's Steve Jobs, Saint Jobs as he's known, Jobs strong-armed Adobe into joining after he complained to CEO Bruce Chizen, C-H-I-Z-E-N, that Adobe was recruiting Apple's employees. Again, this is basically monopoly stuff. And by way, again, of noting that what people really should be afraid of is not the NSA. I have no illusions about the NSA and actually have discussed the information about which everybody is shocked intermittently over the better part of two decades going back to the 1990s. But again, Mussolini said, il fascismo e il corporatismo. And what people are, what overarching in this whole situation is Ronald Reagan's political battle cry when he noted, government isn't the solution to your problems. Government is the problem. And now that has become popular, quote, received wisdom, unquote. I would suggest think again. BillMoyers.com has the following February 10th of 2014 about what companies can do. This is not a tech company, but in terms of il fascismo e il corporatismo and what you out there in the audience ought to be afraid of, not the NSA, but stuff like this. This is called You Won't Believe How One Chemical Company Tried to Discredit a Scientist's Research. It reads in part, Rachel Avid, ADRD, has a reported piece in The New Yorker that reads like pulp fiction. She tells the tale of a scientist who discovered that the popular herbicide may have harmful effects on the endocrine system. As he continued to investigate the matter, he came to believe that the chemicals manufacturer was out to get him. He thought they were following him to conferences, tapping his phones, and systematically trying to drive a wedge between him and the scientific community. Many of his colleagues believed that he was paranoid until a lawsuit yielded a slew of internal corporate documents showing that everything that he imagined the company had been doing to discredit his work had in fact been true. As Kathleen Geyer put it for the Washington Monthly, quote, this story reads like your most paranoid, far-out conspiratorial left-wing nightmare come true, unquote. And I would note something again in consideration of people's seeming ease or the ease with which the notion that private entities should be allowed to store this data. Former NSA Chief Michael Hayden has noted quite accurately, this again, I touched on this back in For the Record 767. I think it bears examination again. This is from USA Today of December 31st of 2013. This is by Susan Page. It's headlined, Former NSA Chief Reject Proposals. In the interview with USA Today's weekly video newsmaker series, Hayden, quote, said the vast data on American phone records are, quote, far safer, and privacy is far more secured with NSA holding the data than some third party, unquote. The commission recommended that the phone companies or a third party take over storing the data. Frankly, I agree with that. It's not to say that NSA is secure. Look how easy Edward Snowden, rather, was able to penetrate it. More about that later. Continuing. Hayden ridiculed the proposal to increase protections for personal data about non-citizens abroad. The Fourth Amendment to our Constitution is not an international treaty, he said. For those who aren't covered by its protections, he said, if your communications contain information that make Americans more safe and more free, game on. I would note in this regard, too, that a lot of Americans use T-Mobile or MetroPCS. Both of those are owned by Deutsche Telekom. That is an entity, a subsidiary of the German government, and the BND, the German Federal Intelligence Service, the successor organization to the Reinhard-Gehlen outfit, uses Deutsche Telekom to spy on people. Verizon was just taken over by an interesting Japanese corporation. Perhaps we'll get to that at a future time. It's a pretty good bet that foreign intelligence services are spying on the users of those. It also has now come out that NSA is actually somewhat behind the game. They have everybody's landline scoped out, but an awful lot of the cell phone calls apparently have been slipping through. But again, I have no illusions about NSA. I don't have any illusions about corporations either, big, powerful corporations. In that regard, the Upstart Business Journal of January 21st of 2014 has a very interesting article by Michael Del Castillo, who will be Obama's third party. And the excerpt is, the uptake. Citizens of the world who were tired of how much of their personal data the U.S. government controlled may soon have to get used to a different dilemma, that same information being controlled by a private company. There's a startup in the rafters that's just been waiting for this moment. Last Friday, President Barack Obama announced sweeping changes to the way the government stores and analyzes information about telephone calls, both in the United States and around the world. Though he made it very clear that the National Security Agency will soon cease keeping a store of all those ones and zeros, he left his options open as to whether the new gatekeepers will be the telecommunications companies themselves or some mysterious, quote, third party, unquote. From the moment he said those words, I couldn't get one word out of my head. Palantir. Co-founded in 2004 by PayPal co-founder Peter Thiel, who was also an investor through his founder's fund venture capital firm, the Palo Alto, California-based company that raised $605 million in venture capital, according to Crunchbase, took its seed round of funding from InQtel, the venture capital branch of the U.S. intelligence community. By the way, I've noted Peter Thiel, the largest investor in Facebook. I talked about him at great length in For the Record 718, in your Facebook, a virtual panopticon, and Palantir appears to be, its disclaimers to the contrary notwithstanding, the company that develops and operates the Prism software. Continuing. Since then, Palantir's technology, which the Times called the most effective tool to date to investigate terrorist networks, has been used, quote, to detect and eliminate sophisticated criminal activity, to, quote, harness massive-scale cyber data to understand network activity, limit exposure, and harden security against cyber security threats, and to, quote, efficiently, effectively, and securely exploit and analyze data to drive more informed operation of planning and strategic decision-making, according to the company's own site. And skipping down. But what perhaps makes Palantir most interesting as a potential third party to hold the telecommunications industry's metadata is the company's founder's stated libertarian leanings. Skipping down, Palantir's biggest rival, i2, was acquired by IBM in 2011, leaving private defense contractors and a handful of other InQtel-funded big data startups as what we consider top contenders for the third-party position. Unless, of course, the government and those who elected the government don't mind having IBM or another massive conglomerate holding on to their private data. Either way, some company or group of companies is about to take center stage in the privacy debate in a pretty big way. Note again that Peter Thiel was a guy who financed Ron Paul's super PAC. Eddie the Friendly Spook contributed to that as well, and Ron Paul is inextricably linked with the neo-Confederate movement, the League of the South, and elements that, again, believe in slavery, not freedom or civil liberties of any kind. Peter Thiel himself is explicitly opposed to democracy, in part because he doesn't think women should be allowed to vote. So in terms of the private entity that is going to be controlling things, I guess one could say, no girls allowed in this fort, you know, with a backward S, right? More about the private versus public dynamic. One of the things that I find so interesting is the complete myopia and the narcissism and the egocentricity that surrounds so much of this. David E. Sanger and Eric Schmidt of the New York Times had the following to say. On February 8th of 2014, Snowden used low-cost tool to best NSA. It reads in part, intelligence officials investigating how Edward J. Snowden gained access to a huge trove of the country's most highly classified documents say they have determined that he used inexpensive and widely available software to, quote, scrape, unquote, the National Security Agency's networks and kept at it even after he was briefly challenged by agency officials. Using web crawler software designed to search, index, and back up a website, Mr. Snowden, quote, scraped data out of our systems, unquote, while he went about his day job, according to a senior intelligence official. Skipping down, similar techniques were used by Chelsea Manning, then known as Private First Class Bradley Manning, who was convicted of turning documents and videos over to WikiLeaks in 2010. One of the things I find so interesting, and again, one of the flaws in NSA is they have. We're going to talk about that more in our one or two programs of summary analysis. They're vigilant against potential external enemies, but they have proved very vulnerable to counterintelligence. I'm not sure they figured out that BND, which I think is the whip hand in this whole Snowden WikiLeaks operation, I'm not sure they have figured out yet that they've been doubled on by their German partner, BND. What is worth noting here is that Snowden and Bradley Manning are being hailed as whistleblowers. This isn't whistleblowing. What they have done is to vacuum clean up a whole bunch of information. In the case of Bradley Manning, some 700,000 files. In the case of Snowden, some 1.7 million files. They could not possibly have read all of those. They then leaked those. That is incredibly irresponsible. Who knows what kind of information is on there and what sorts of things could result? Who could get killed? Is there information about nuclear weapons on there? The point being here, and we're going to talk more about this, what court authorized Bradley Manning or Edward Snowden to do what they did? An article in CNET of January 20th of 2010 by Declan McCullough has an interview with John Young. He was a co-founder of WikiLeaks, and he wound up breaking with WikiLeaks, and he said the following about WikiLeaks. We've talked about this in For the Record 732. Quote, about WikiLeaks, which is inextricably linked with the Snowden op. They're acting like a cult. They're acting like a religion. They're acting like a government. They're acting like a bunch of spies. They're hiding their identity. They don't account for the money. They promise all sorts of good things. They seldom let you know what they're really up to. There was suspicion from the day one that this was entrapment run by someone unknown to suck a number of people into a trap. So actually, we don't know, but it's certainly a standard counterintelligence technique. They're acting like a bunch of spies, huh? Again, who authorized WikiLeaks or Edward Snowden or Bradley Manning to do what they did? What court oversaw that? John Young himself on the Cryptome.org had this about WikiLeaks, a communication from Julian Assange himself. He said, "We have pullbacks from NED, CFR, Freedom House, and other CIA," and I can't use this word on the air. "We have all of pre-2005 Afghanistan, almost all of India Fed, half a dozen foreign ministries, dozens of political parties and consulates, World Bank, APEC, UN sanctions, trade groups, Tibet and Fulan du Far associations, and Russian phishing mafia who pull data everywhere." That's P-H-I-S-H. "We're drowning. We don't even know a tenth of what we have or who it belongs to. We stopped storing it at 1 terabyte. Well, again, what oversight is there of WikiLeaks? Who authorized them to do this? It looks like some information they gave to Alexander Lukashenko, Europe's last dictator, was used to murder some of the dissidents in Belarus. Note the Russian phishing mafia here, with whom WikiLeaks is partnered. Those are the very sophisticated internet criminals that, they'll steal your identity, max out your credit cards, and whatnot. The following is from Spam House by Quentin Jenkins of December 14th of 2010. WikiLeaks Mirror Malware Warning by Quentin Jenkins. Spam House has for over a year regarded Hihachi as an outfit run, quote, by criminals for criminals in the same mold as the criminal est domains. The Panama-registered but Russian-run Hihachi.net is highly involved in botnet command and control and the hosting of Russian cybercrime. We also note that the content at mirror.wikileaks.info is rather unlike what's at the real WikiLeaks mirrors. And skipping down. Few of the people who contacted us realized that the, quote, press release, unquote, they had read was not written by WikiLeaks and not issued by WikiLeaks, but by the WikiLeaks.info site only, the very site we are warning about, which, by no coincidence, is hosted on the same Russian-based cybercrime Hihachi.net server as irc.anops.net. And this entire, this post is excerpted in the description for the record, 774. I would note that WikiLeaks is partnered with the Russian phishing mafia, who apparently also have a mirrored site. All I can say is good luck when they get a hold of your information. We're all out of time, boys and girls. Be sure to tune in for the next exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. Remember, Eddie's not like those other spooks, boys and girls. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 774, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 14, The Corporate Connections and the Public versus Private Dynamic. This has been recorded on 2/16/2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.